And the UN, during the right after the earthquake, the UN brought cholera into Haiti. The UN has never done anything good, and their soldiers left behind them a number of children who they didn't care whether they lived or died, children that they had fathered. And so this is the legacy of the UN, and much more, the destruction of our institution. They presided over that. They enforced what was going on there, the killings of the Haitian people, of the masses of the Haitian people. And that's the legacy that the UN has left us, so that today, Haiti has become a living hell for people in Haiti, and Haitians are fleeing, yet they are being brutalized when they flee to the Dominican Republic, when they come to the U.S. border, when they go to some other islands in the Caribbean. That is what's going on there is really unspeakable. It's a horror. And to hear this man talk about Haiti needs a robust force. I'm saying all of this to tell people to raise a cry of alarm, to tell the audience to please spread the word. Stand up with the Haitian people. Now, today, the Haitian people, they have never accepted it. They have taken to the streets and they said, liberty or death, that they'd rather die. And the more the police are killing them, the more they are fighting them with bottles and bricks and rocks, whatever they got. They are setting up barricades to protect their neighborhoods so that, and they are demanding that lackey of these killers, of these international pirates, these international exploiters, these international racists, that Ariel Henry be gone from power. They are demanding because
in order to put those guys in jail, they got to make a trip to Washington, because obviously Washington has been calling the shots for a long time. Pierre Labossiere, we are out of time. If people want to know more about what you're doing, if they want to help lock arms with you, what's the best way to find out information? Very quickly.
Yes, you can reach Haiti Action Committee, which is at HaitiSolidarity.net. HaitiSolidarity.net. This is our website. We're also on Facebook, Haiti Action Committee on Facebook. And also for additional information, Kevin Pina has a very good, he has a Twitter page, Haiti InfoProj, that provides some very good information.
And we're going to have Kevin on later on this week. We're going to not let go of this. Pierre Labossiere, thank you for taking the time out. Please be safe. Come back soon. We're locking arms together on this one.
Jeremy Scahill, author of Dirty Wars, and you're listening to KBOO, Portland, 90.7 FM.
Tune in to KBOO Radio at 11 a.m. on the first Friday of every month for Understanding Homelessness with Dr. Marisa Zapata, a professor from Portland State University and director of the Homelessness Research and Action Collaborative. Each show will explore a different aspect of homelessness through the lens of people with lived experience, as well as other experts in research, policy, and programs.
Hello, and welcome to Boom Goddess Radio. I'm Jennifer Davis Page, your host. You can find us on YouTube and our website, boomgoddessradio.com. And I want to welcome a really wonderful woman that I've come to know, who, and it's my privilege to be interviewing her today. And she is Jody Hample. She is the founder and CEO of Success by Design. She's an entrepreneur, trainer, coach, and writer. She is the co-author of Life, the Next Phase, and this is navigating the issues of caring for your aging parents or loved ones. Jody leads the Arizona Daughterhood Circle, a group of women family caregivers. Welcome, Jody, to Boom Goddess Radio.
Hello, thanks for having me.
Success by Design is a personal development company with the mission of educating and empowering people to live lives that they love. I love that line. I absolutely love that. Why don't you talk to our listeners? I want our listeners to get to know you a little bit. So would you please give them the Jody story and tell them how you had to take care of your mother at a very young age?
Yes. I could start with, it was a rainy Saturday night in 1957, but we won't go that far back. we'll start in the middle. So I'm an only child, and my mother was divorced. And when I was 19 and my mom was only 59, she had a massive stroke. And it left her completely paralyzed on one side, no speech, no cognitive ability. She didn't know who I was. They actually gave her a 5% chance of living. But thankfully, that was not the end of her story. She went on to be able to live for another 20 years, which meant I had 20 more years of being a caregiver at different stages. Initially, I was very heavily involved in her care. Eventually, she got to where she could live on her own. She could never go back to work, but she could live on her own. And then she had some other series of strokes and a heart attack and ended up in full-time care. So I kind of went through the gamut with her.
Did you have, at the time that she had her stroke, did she qualify for hospice service at that time? Were you able to get any kind of help like that?
Not at that time. You know, I will tell you that I was in the boat where a lot of women are, that everything's going along fine and then a crisis happens and we're not prepared for it. We don't know what services are available, what things cost, what the next steps should be. And I was totally in that boat. So I didn't even know that hospice was a thing. So, and there wasn't a lot of outside help. And of course that was in 1977. So we didn't have the internet, you know, to find out the kinds of things we can now. But the challenge with the internet is you have to know enough to know what to ask to get any information back. So yeah, it was all she had medical insurance for while she was in the hospital, but once she got out of the hospital, it was all self-pay after that.
So you were her sole caregiver, and at 19 years old, so you took care of her for 20 years from 19 to 39, or did you have pockets of time that she got better? Tell us that story, that she got better and you weren't her sole caregiver, or you didn't have to dedicate as much time as you once did. Tell us that.
Yeah, initially when she had her stroke, I was a full-time college student. So I dropped out of school and put my education on hold and took care of her. But eventually we had no income coming in. So I had to go back to work. And then we had a full-time caregiver who was there Monday through Friday. And then I was her full-time caregiver on the weekends. And I did that for 3 years, I think. And then she got to where she could live alone. So I was able to move on and, you know, move out and go have my life. But I didn't have to be there day to day to care for her, but she could do the day to day stuff. But if anything out of the ordinary came up, she really didn't have the cognitive ability to work through that.
So she could be by herself during that time?
Yes. Okay. And she had a number of years that she could do that, but I couldn't just, you know, go away and, you know, not show up. I was responsible for her bills and, you know, making sure, checking in with, you know, her health and, you know, all those kinds of things, you know, that usually your children aren't involved in when you're an adult.
Now, during those years, I would imagine, like it's fairly recent now that there are caregivers that will be paid by the state to take care of their loved ones. I know they didn't have such a thing back then. Did Medicare and, I mean, did all of her insurances provide everything that she needed?
Nope. So I think there's two big unknown areas, I think, when it comes to paying for care. The first one is a lot of people don't know that Medicare's not free. They think that Medicare's free, and it's not free. There's premiums and deductibles and all of that. But the other thing is that Medicare doesn't pay for care. So if you need to have someone come into your house to provide care, or your loved one is going to move to some kind of retirement community for care, Medicare doesn't pay for that. So you either pay for that out of your own pocket, mm-hmm. or some people have long-term care insurance. But if you don't get that when you're young, it's probably not a feasible option later on. And it's very expensive to have full-time care. These days, average is around $20 to $25 an hour. So if you have someone come in just a few hours a day to like help with showering and getting dressed and things like that, that can run you about $36,000 a year, year after year after year.
The book that you have written, Life, the Next Phase. What made you write that? It's such a wonderful guide, but what, aside from the obvious, I just want our listeners to know what made you write that book and who helped you with it?
Sure. I have a really dear friend who actually used to be my boss, and we did a lot of projects together when we worked together. But she called me one day crying because she had just gotten off the phone with her cousin. And her uncle had Parkinson's and was really starting to show signs of that. And she was very upset because she felt helpless. She didn't know what to do. And she said, I just wish there was a book that gave you a step-by-step guide. And I don't know what I was thinking. I said, well, we could write one. And so we decided to do it. That is in line with my helping people live lives that they love, though, by giving them tools. So we started the project. And then my stepmother at the time was an elder law attorney and dealt with situations every day. So we brought her into the project. And the three of us did, you know, I went through. I had already gone through the caregiving. My co-author, Mary Beth, was kind of in the middle of figuring it out. And then my stepmother dealt with it on the back end on daily from her business.
Was your stepmother a caregiver at some point as well? Or I know she was a lawyer, but
she wasn't a live-in caregiver, but she had both of her parents had issues that she was involved with.
Let's talk about the daughterhood circle. I so admire the fact that you have decided that you were going to take on the daughterhood circle for Arizona. Tell us about the group and how many members are there? And do you cap it out at some point? Or tell us about those wonderful women.
Okay, so the Daughterhood group, Daughterhood Circle, we're the Arizona chapter. It's actually a nationwide organization. So we meet once a month, and it is just an open forum for anyone who's caring for a loved one. It could be parents, it could be grandparents, it could be a spouse. Most of the people who come, they're caring for parents, but it's just an open forum for them to come and just have other people in the same situation to connect with and talk to. So some are looking for resources, some are looking for how to take care of themselves, some are looking for just a place to come and vent and talk to people who are in similar situations where they can say things that we all understand that maybe other people wouldn't understand.
Do you invite, are men welcome? I have interviewed men that have been caregivers for their wife or their mother. do you welcome men in the daughterhood circle?
Absolutely. It started out kind of organically for women, but it has grown, and men are welcome as well. But you're right, it's very rare that men are the caregivers. I find usually it's their wives or their sisters who end up becoming the caregivers.
With women in the circle, once they've lost their loved one and they're no longer caregivers, are they welcome to continue to come to the meetings and perhaps help women that are currently going through it with their own experiences?
Yes, we've had that happen several times. One, it's great because they do share their experiences, but it also, in talking about their experiences and their loved one, it's kind of helps them with that, you know, grief and healing process after they're no longer a caregiver.
Now, do you have any advice for men or women who don't have children, or have children and the children are not willing to be caregivers? Is that a topic that you talk about in the group, and what advice would you give them?
Yeah, we talk about that, and I actually fall into that category. I'm an only child and I'm single and I have no kids. So in my situation, luckily I've got a very good friend who's like a sister, and she is the person who's going to be in charge of me. But if you don't have somebody like that, then there are professional organizations. You can hire a professional. It's called, I just lost the word, fiduciary. All right. A professional fiduciary that it is their job to take care of your money and make decisions for you with your best interests in mind.
Do you have any particular talks about in the daughterhood? Do you talk about how to take care of yourself during this very difficult time?
Yes, that comes up often. Because
okay, so you can talk about anything. That's an open.
Yeah, anything that you want to talk about. It's an open forum. I just open the floor, and everybody, whoever wants to talk, can talk.
Because being a caregiver, as you know, is a job that is probably the most difficult, hardest job that you'll ever have in your life. To see your loved one dying and you taking care of them, I mean, and doing all of the heavy lifting and seeing your mother or your father or whomever you're taking care of coming to the end of their life. We are going to break. We're going to take a brief break, and when we come back, we will continue our conversation with Jody.
What in the bogoto? tatina watintin bogoto watin tatina watintin bogoto watinta bafaz watinta bafaz watinta bafaz watintin bogoto watinta bafaz watinta bafaz watinta bafaz watintin bogoto uzoyithola kanjani uhlele koneni wena mama uzoyithola kanjani uhlele koneni
Welcome back to Boom Goddess Radio. We have had a wonderful conversation with Jody Hempel about caregiving and how important it is to take care of our loved ones when that becomes necessary. Jody, welcome back to the show. Let's talk about a plan. I mean, you've got your parents, and now you are going to be a person after your parents die, or you tell us about what kind of plan we should put in place for ourselves.
Okay. I think a big mistake that people make is that they don't sit down and talk with their loved ones and find out what the plan that their loved ones have. To find out what their loved ones want. Do they want to stay in their house? If they do they have the funds to pay for it? Do they want to move into a retirement community at some point? So when is that point? Do they have powers of attorney so that if they can't take care of themselves, someone can step in and pay their bills and make health decisions? And who are those people? I find, and I was guilty of it too, right? Is that people don't want to talk about that, and so they wait until there's a crisis, something happens, a stroke, a heart attack, a broken hip, whatever, and now you're in a crisis situation trying to figure out what to do. So if you've got a parent who's over 70 and you haven't sat down and had those conversations, and I say conversations because it's not just, okay, we've got 30 minutes and we need to talk about what you want in your life. You want to have conversations so that then your plan is to how to support your parents or your loved ones in having what they want instead of stepping in and imposing what you want on their life.
That's really important information because when I sit down and I talk to most of my girlfriends, we're all over 70, and I don't think any of us had that. Nobody has written that down because we don't think anything's going to happen to us. So this is really excellent information. And how do people get information? How do they get to you? Tell them your website, give them all the information that they need to be able to reach you and get this wonderful information.
Yeah, my website is Jody Hempel, so JodiHempel.com. But if anyone's interested in the daughterhood, if you go to my website and click on the resources for caregivers, daughterhood, we meet via Zoom right now, the last Monday of the month from 5:30 to 7 p.m. Arizona time. You can find the link to the Zoom on my website.
So because you don't do end of life, do you do any kind of grief therapy? Even though your loved one might still be alive, there's still a grieving process. Do you talk about that in the daughterhood?
Yes.
Do you have a separate segment in daughterhood for people that have lost their loved ones? Do you have a grief component? Can someone who has lost someone come to your group and talk about the grieving process, and or do you send them to another group?
We don't have a separate grieving process group. It's just part of caring for an aging loved one. So okay. It's just part of that. And if that's what they're going through, we're there to support them.
Do you walk them through Because when something like this happens, now, of course, you've got the internet and you can go online and you can get much information about what kinds of tools you're going to need if it's a walker or
a bedside. And it can be overwhelming.
So do you guide them through, because sometimes we just get blindsided and we just don't know what to do. We don't even know how to go on the internet anymore sometimes when we're grieving like that. So mm-hmm. can you assist them with what to do, step by step, what to do during this?
And that's where having somewhat of a plan in place first. So I always encourage people to be proactive. And maybe it's just a list of resources that you're putting together of attorneys and CPAs and assisted living locations, things like that. Is just a beginning of a plan. Who else can help you with things? You know, using things like Instacart if they can't go shopping anymore.
Right.
But looking at all those resources when you're calmer and you know you're not under stress, because when we're under stress, we go into fight or flight.
Well, you know, and it's so important to put a plan together, because I had another friend whose mother put a plan together, put it in an envelope. Now, this was her end of life, but she said it was a gift from God to open up that envelope and see where the bank accounts were, where the passwords were, and to know that she was the person on the bank account that could go and get the funds. So it really is very important to have your loved ones, whoever is going to that you trust to take care of things, for them to have that, because you know you got a phone and you can't get you don't know what the password is and I don't know what to do. So it's
really, when you work with me, we put together like all the try to get your parents' bank accounts, their passwords, or at least if they're not given to you, where are they, so that when something happens I can get to all of this information.
Jody, we talked about male caregivers and how few of them take on the responsibilities of their loved ones. And do you have any men that you have spoken with that have come to you about taking care of their loved ones?
I do, and as you know, as you said earlier, you've had, you know, some men male caregivers, and I know some people who are male caregivers. Most of the time, they aren't the ones who are involved. But can I give you an example that kind of ties everything we've been talking about together?
Absolutely.
So I worked with a gentleman by the name of Jake, and he lived, I can't remember what state, but North Midwest. And his father had passed away, but his father's parents were still alive in Florida. And so he took on that responsibility. And when his grandfather died, he felt that he should move his grandmother from Florida to where they lived. Now, his grandfather had put in place that the grandmother could go to a retirement community and live out her entire life, and it wouldn't cost her anything, because he had set that up through an organization. But Jake thought, oh no, now that grandpa's gone, mom should be by us and grandma should be by us. So moved her close to them. He traveled all the time, so he wasn't really around. It fell to his wife to kind of be the person to check in. And then grandma needed help, so they moved her into the house. And then she needed more help, and now she needed they needed to really get her like assisted living or something. But to go to the place in Florida, she had to be healthy and not need help in order to get in and get those services. And so they blew it by moving her, not, you know, really understanding what was in place ahead of time, and moving her, they kind of blew it. And then her grandmother didn't have the kind of money that was needed for care. So then they ended up having to pay for grandmother's care out of pocket that they hadn't planned to do. So it's kind of an example of some of the things of not to do. You know, they didn't have the conversations. They didn't really think through what's it going to be like down the road if grandma comes to live with us. And it's a, I think it's also an example of how often men don't step up and be the caregivers. They, their sisters or their wives are the ones who actually step into the day-to-day things.
And that's why you have to just, like you said earlier, have a plan, because all of that could have been avoided by just doing some research, making some calls and saying, can I move my grandmother to Michigan or wherever?
Yeah.
And then he would have been told that her insurance would only cover her if she stayed in the state.
And the kicker was, when grandma started needing full-time care, Jake and his wife wanted to move to Florida, but then they couldn't, because now they couldn't move grandma. So if they had just let her stay in Florida and go with the plan, it would have been so much better.
Well, that's, as I said, when you talked about putting a plan together, we all need to have one. Do any of your ladies, are they resistant about putting a plan together when you talk to them about that? Or is it just makes good common sense? But sometimes people just don't have.
They are resistant because they can already be overwhelmed and go, okay, now I have to do something else. But I have worked with a few people who have put together plans and come back and said, oh, my mother just ended up in the hospital, but I already knew what to do because we had already worked through it. So it was just the emotion of having a loved one in the hospital, not trying to figure out everything else at the same time.
You have given us so much good information. I so appreciate you being on the show with me today. Can you just, again, give all of our listeners your information, how they can reach you, your website, your email address?
Again, my website is jodihempel.com. Pretty simple, just my name.
Okay.
And my email is jody.essesinsam.hempel@gmail.com. And that information is also on my website.